My Uncle Silas, all his life, was very fond of a baked potato. Whenever I walked over to see him on cold midwinter nights when roadsides were crisp and white with hoarfrost, his first words were almost always, "You get the taters, boy, while I get the wine." He was always very particular, I noticed, about how the potatoes were cooked. "Course, they're better in a twitch fire," he often said, "when it's died down a bit and you can poke them into that hot ash. You get the burnt taste in them then, and it takes a bit of beating." But in the absence of twitch fires, he did the next best thing. At the side of his kitchen fireplace, there used to be one of those big baking ovens, large enough to hold a side of mutton, where in the old days faggots were lit for baking bread. When the fired faggots had died down, the big pink and white kidney potatoes, pricked all over with a fork, went into the bed of ash, and soon the little kitchen was sweet and warm with the smell of their cooking. "Ever tell you about Pouchy Reeves and the baked taters? Well, it's been a minute, very like I never did. The smell on them allus brings it back." In wintertime, we almost always drank elderberry wine, sometimes slightly mulled if the nights were very cold, and it was generally about the third or fourth glass that some reminiscence far out of the past began. I said I didn't think he had, nor, I thought, had I ever heard of Pouchy.
Shoemaker, handcraft, bit of a dab hand, I'll grant him that, but he knowed it, bit of a toff in a way. What shoemakers used to call a notch above a tapper. Very cocky. Fancy waistcoats and walking sticks and big buttonholes of a Sunday. Too high and mighty for the rest of us chaps.
Here he licked a drop of wine from his lips with what I thought was no innocent relish, and I proceeded to remark that it wouldn't have surprised me at all to hear that Pouchy, with such a splendid array of attractions and accomplishments, was also a great one with women.
"Never heard nothing else. Women, morning, noon and night. He were a-getting on them into hay fields and stack yards and straw barns and stables and holding away so fast you'd thought he'd never have a minute for shoemaking left."
I had once remarked that this seemed to be a matter of very serious rivalry, and in return he gave me a look over the top of his wine glass that was almost pious in the bland severity of its rebuke.
"Now, old hard, I'm had a few girls in me time, one way and another, but, like I always tell you, I were never hard to them. They were always hard to me."
A very subtle difference. He said, never mind about a very subtle difference, but when you got a man boasting that he had two girls in bed at the same time, and another up in the church belfry while the Sunday evening service was on, and another in one corner of the wheat field while her husband was mowing and bonding in the other, then you started to wonder.
"Another thing, like I say, I'm had a gal or two in me time, and some fair samples among them and all, but I never done no poaching. But Pouchy, well, he were different. He liked nicking on them from other chaps. It were more fun."
He then went on to ask me if I knew the swan with two necks at Nenwold and the two old tits who kept it. When I said I did, he said,
"Never think they were sisters, would you? Nell, she's like a damn great beanpole and arms like a man. Lucy looks like a bit dropped off on her. A real Dylan. Course, they're getting on a bit now, but in my day, Nell would chuck a man out of the bar as easy as spit in your eye. I see to chuck a man named Butch Walters out once. Big labouring man, fists like legs of mutton."
After what was really an uncommonly long speech for him, he took a long draught of elderberry, refilled the glasses, wiped his mouth on the back of his hand, and then opened the oven door to see how the baked potatoes were coming on.
"Give 'em another 10 minutes. Get the butter and salt, boy. Then we'll be ready for 'em. Plenty of butter."
And what, I now wanted to know, having found the salt cellar and the big brown crock of butter, had the old tits to do with Pouchy?
Well, that wasn't old then. I'm talking about 50 years back, very like more. In them days, Lucy were an uncommon good-looking gal, but freckly, like a thrush's egg.
I here murmured that I supposed in consequence Pouchy was after her, but he merely gave me another look of rather sharp reproof and said,
"I'm coming to that, if you'll let me breathe. You will get a fur head on me." No, no, she were courting at the time. Well, you could call it courting in a way. This goodly chap Will Croom were arter. Well, I say arter her. All he done was sit all night in the bar and just stare at her over his beer. Nice enough chap, but unaccountable shy. But on the deaf side and all.
It was about this time, he went on, that Nell slipped on a patch of ice in the pub yard and fell and broke her leg. It was mighty cold that winter, 10 weeks of frost.
Well, about that time there were allus me and Tupman Sanders and Ollie Sharman and Ponto Pack and Gunnar Jarvis in the Swan of a Night, and of course this here goodly Will Croom was tearing at Lucy. Then, no sooner had Nell been taken off to hospital than Pouchy began to come in.
After the girl?
Well, at first it wasn't so much that. It were the way it kept a-taunting and a-teasing Will. Never give him no peace, allus on at him. Nasty bits out the side of his mouth, you know. I say we got Will the lady killer in again tonight. Fast worker, Will. Moves like a whippet. Brought your salt with you tonight, Will boy. That's how you catch birds, Will, putting salt on the tails. Ah, it made it worse, because most of the time Will couldn't hear.
It would never have happened, he went on to say, if Nell had been there. You wouldn't have got away with that lark if Nell had been behind the bar.
Better get the taters out, boy, afore me belly drops out.
While I was getting the potatoes out of the oven and finding the plates for them and putting the salt and butter handy on the kitchen table, he reminded me that all this was in the days before the Swan burnt down. It was the old Swan then, stone and thatched, and along one side of it was the big covered way for coaches. Every Saturday night in winter, a man named Sprivy Litchfield came and stood in there with his old hot potato oven with a paraffin flare on top.
"We'd nip out and get half a dozen and eat 'em with a beer. Very good, too, they were. No better than these tonight, though."
The potatoes, scalding hot and floury and drenched in butter, were too much for my tongue, but Silas simply forked them into his ripe old mouth with never a cooling breath, as if they had been nothing but lukewarm custard. He crackled at the dark, burnt skin, too, and it struck me that it was just like the skin of his own gnarled earth-brown hands.
"Well, it got wusser and wusser, this here teasing and a-taunting. Then, one night, I caught Lucy wiping her eyes and having a bit of a tune in the passage, and she said it were more than flesh and blood could bear. Tupman and Ollie and Gunner and Ponto were all for bouncing Pouchy out, but I said..."
At this point, my Uncle Silas suddenly broke off, looking uncommonly crafty, his bloodshot eye half shut, the other reflectively contemplating a lump of well-burnt potato skin.
"All this takes me back. Whenever I get hold of an update..."
He laughed very softly, shaking his head.
"Never forget it. See it now?"
My potato was cooler now, and I sat eating the buttery, salty flesh with relish too, waiting to hear what happened.
"I recollected seeing a chap once in a pub over at Swine's Head. He weren't quite all ninepence, and two fellas put rum in his beer. Knockout. Fast asleep in 5 minutes, just like a baby."
"Here," I said, "that if this was all they did to Pouchy, it sounded pleasant
rather than otherwise, and anyway, harmless enough.
Well, it ain't quite at all,
Silas said, and once again he laughed very softly, his lips shining red with wine.
It ain't quite at all. First we treated him to a beer with one rum in it, then one with two in it, and then one with three in it. Lucy was slipping on him in, and we were keeping Pouchy talking. He were very happy, and in about half hour or so, he went out like a light.
And then, before answering, my Uncle Silas took a long swig of wine, and laughed with all his old fruity wickedness.
I went out, and I got a good big hot tater.
And what, I begged him to tell me, did they do with a hot potato?
Dropped it in his breeches.
Front or back?
Well, he was sitting down at the time, so he couldn't very well get it down the back.
He laughed again, really loudly this time, and said he wished I'd been there. Had I ever heard a pig being killed? It sounded just like that. Injury permanent? I asked.
Well, I don't know about that, but it were a good big tater, and we got it well down there.
Now I noticed that he'd finished his first potato, and I opened the oven door and took out another. As he pressed it with his thumb, he recoiled a bit and said blandly,
"Sting a tidy bit when they're hot, boy."
As I sat watching him break the skin of the potato with his crusty fingers, I begged to know what happened to Pouchy after that.
Well, it's a funny thing. He sort of went downhill, took to the beer very bad, went to the dogs, never boasted about women no more, and in the end, he were half a cripple.
This, I said, didn't surprise me.
That's right,
he said. Slowly, he picked up the bottle of elderberry, filled up the two glasses, held his own up to me, and gave me one of those long, solemn, bloodshot winks of his.
Lost his pride. Unaccountable bad. Passes the butter.